USA Podcast. This is Ron Costa broadcasting live in the Mappable USA studios here in Las Vegas. And today we're going to be continuing our talk about opportunity zones and real estate crowdfunding in general. And to do that, we have to bring in Vicky Hutchmala from the QOZMarketplace.com. Vicky, how are you today?
I'm doing excellent, Ron. Another great day in Vegas. We have an outstanding guest with us today, so let's get going.
Yeah, well, you know, just as background again, Vicky, everybody on the podcast who's been listening to us knows that we went to the Opportunity Zone Expo a couple of weeks ago and really ran into a lot of real interesting people. What I'd like to do right now is bring on somebody who really made a great impression on us. So let's bring on Neil Bauer from Grow Capital. He's the CEO and founder. Neil, how are you today?
Fantastic, guys. Thanks for having me on the show. I'm very excited to be on.
Yeah, we're happy that you took some time to speak with us today. So Neil, you're really making an impact on opportunity zones and investor education in general. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background and how and what Grow Capitalist really is all about?
Sure. So I'm a technologist, not a real estate guy. Had a successful tech career, successful tech exit. I got into real estate investing for tax abatement. You know, it took me a while. I was paying 50%+ of my salary as taxes because I live in California, and we exist only to serve the state. And so, you know, after paying that 52.3% of taxation a few years, I got fed up and started investing in real estate, and also was very lucky in that my first real estate project was a new construction project. You know, a lot of people that get into new real estate, the first project is like one single family rental or duplex. Well, mine happened to be a $4.5 million, 27,000 square foot mixed use space. It was office, administrative, and students. So it was classrooms.
Oh,
and I had to build it from scratch, right? And this was 2003. And I had to do it for my job, right? So this wasn't me doing real estate. I wasn't making any money. I wasn't charging anybody. It was for my company. And I had to repeat it 2 years later with essentially the same setup, but a much larger campus, much more dollars involved. And so I learned so much from my CEO, who was very involved with it, and, you know, the general contractors that were involved. So it was phenomenal to learn so much about real estate, about everything from egress and fire codes to density levels to heating, cooling, air conditioning, all of that stuff without actually, you know, formally ever having to pay somebody or even be in real estate. I mean, I didn't even think of it as real estate. I just thought of it as something wonderful that I'm learning. And then after that, I did the same thing as everybody else. I bought 10 single families in California. You know, I still hold those. I bought 10 triplexes in Chicago. I hated those because I didn't understand the demographics difference between South Chicago and California. So that was a disaster for me, and I learned so much from that disaster. And I started basically taking the analytics. I basically said, you know, why did I have such a horrible time in South Chicago? And I started to understand that demographics is what drives real estate profit, right? And, you know,
yes.
Most people don't get this. They are focused so much on what is the rent and what does the unit look like? What does the roof and the foundation look like? My message to all of those people is you have to start with the demographics first. You shouldn't even be looking at that property if you don't understand the demographics, right? First, start with the macro demographics. And so I started teaching people about how macro demographics affect them, and using my example of how horribly I screwed up in the South Chicago area. And so I basically started telling them about five macro demographics that affect everything, these metrics. And that was a certain amount of population growth, a certain percentage of population growth, a certain percentage of job growth, a certain percentage of home price growth, a certain percentage of income growth, and a certain reduction in crime. Yeah, I keep saying certain because it's not enough to simply go into an area that has an increase in population. What's important to understand is how much population leads to increases in home prices, which lead to increases in rent.
Exactly.
So understanding that Goldilocks zone, that sweet spot, is really the key to success in real estate. And when I started teaching this, it was like 10 or 20 or 30 people, and now it's 10,000 people a year that learn these demographics from me.
Well, excellent, because you're absolutely right. What works in Vegas may not work in LA, which is not going to work in Chicago, and you have to understand the people who's coming, who's buying, who's living, and what they're interested in, and then design your project around the people that are going to be part of your project. It seems like, to me, that seems like, so how would you do it any other way? But according to you and your experience, people don't approach it that way. That's mind-boggling to me.
No, and I would say that the people that approach real estate from the perspective of let's start with the demographics are very much in the minority. And because we're talking about opportunity zones, this is why I'm on this program, to tell people that when it comes to opportunity zone projects, demographics were already the most important thing in real estate. They are now outsized in importance.
Right.
Because we're trying to do one of the hardest things in real estate, and I'm not saying it's not a good thing to do. I think plenty of money will be made in opportunity zones. Lots of people will get rich. But understand this, that most new construction is done in Class A or Class B areas that are very healthy, that have all of these metrics pointing in the right direction, the population growth, the job growth, income growth, home price growth, reduction in crime. All of those are pointing to the right direction. And that's when we do new construction. And still new construction is considered more risky than buying, you know, just an existing property still. But now what we're trying to do is we're trying to take opportunity zones where many of those metrics are pointing in the wrong direction.
Correct.
And trying to build the same building in the middle of a trade war with escalating steel and concrete prices. That is the actual task that these thousands of developers are taking on, and nobody's acknowledging that this stuff is really, really hard.
You're absolutely right. It's like, oh, here's they're approaching it in the wrong way. And, you know, sometimes a challenge in something and overcoming that challenge is where you make the most money, where you just go in and follow, do what everybody else did before you, not necessarily as successful, but accepting, understanding, and realizing the challenge and overcoming it, that sometimes is where you make the most profit.
I think so. And I think that what will happen is we will see projects in a very wide range of demographic quality. And I stress that word, demographic quality, because we might often see projects where the demographic quality is really, really low, but the quality of the developer is pretty high. The quality of the construction team is pretty high. So they'll build a good product. So when it's done, it won't have, you know, roof leaks. It won't have permitting issues. It will work. But that doesn't change the fact that it's in an area where the tenant base actually cannot afford the rents that have been, you know, plugged into the pro forma, or they cannot afford it the moment they lose their job. So,
exactly.
You know, yeah, you know, it might be that the tenant, maybe their average income in that area is, let's say $38,000, okay? That's very borderline because you're trying to get, let's say, $1,300, $1,400 in rents. I'm going to give you a multifamily example here because it resonates with everybody, right? Even if you're in hotels, I think the example would sort of apply. But what you're trying to do is take a tenant base and where you're already asking them for maybe 40% or more of their monthly gross income as rent. And that may work today, but the moment we get even a slight recession, and I'm not talking 2008, that was crazy, but a slight recession, a vanilla U.S. recession, what will happen is 10%, 15% of these people will lose their jobs. And when you have a demographic where the average or where the median income is under $40,000, they cannot sustain even a month of not getting paid without defaulting on their rent. And so you have a situation where your property is running at 95% and your economic occupancy is really good, and then you have one quarter of negative GDP growth or a recession, and now 20% of your tenants are delinquent. 30% of them are delinquent, and now you're having trouble paying your mortgage. In the past, developers didn't deal with this because they sold those properties. Now
right.
They have to hold them for 10 years.
And that makes it a whole different ball of wax, because not only do you have to approach it different, you have to hold it longer. And as you say, you can't build a high-end property in a low-income community where they can't sustain it for the long run. Just because they can afford to move in doesn't mean they can maintain it, doesn't mean that they can stay there, and doesn't mean that if a challenge comes into their life that they can still live there. But if you don't think of that in the first place, well, then you kind of shoot yourself in the foot.
Exactly. You know, when you know, if you look at QOZ Marketplace or you look at Investreel, you know, basically the folks that are listing these sites, I currently have one of my assistants going into those actual locations, you know, the real location where the projects are,
correct,
and actually trying to figure out what the quality of each of those OZs is. And I plan on writing an article about this, an article that basically talks about, wait a minute, you've got some where, you know, this guy's thinking, okay, I'm going to build, you know, at 200, you know, maybe two, but let's say $160,000 a door. That's what I'm going to build at. And then I'm going to get $1,400 of rent. And he's in this kind of a demographic. And then there's somebody else who's saying the same thing. I'm going to build at $160,000 a door. I'm going to have $1,400 in rent. And then there's this much better demographic. I'm going to try and highlight actual examples. I hope that I use the legalese right and don't get sued. But my goal there really is to highlight the fact that you've got a wide diversity, because people don't start with demographics. They start with their physical location.
Right.
What we are seeing is developers are building in areas that they live in or they have construction crews in, regardless of the quality of the opportunity zones.
Correct.
Right? And
correct.
And so we're seeing, you know, I use a number of different tools. One of the tools is that I use is Investreel. In the last week, I have seen projects where the Investreel gross score for that particular opportunity zone in terms of demographics, I've seen one that where the score was 17 out of 100, which is an awful score. And then
right.
I saw one that was 92. In my mind, that 92 project, if done by the right developer with the right price, has a much greater chance of lasting 10 years and returning money to investors. And, oh, by the way, possibly having a class change where that area, if it's a 92, it's probably already a B, but it might switch to an A.
Correct.
Creating returns that nobody is forecasting, right? I mean, that could be a doubling of returns beyond what's already forecasted because the class of the area changes. Well, that could happen. The one that's 17, in my mind, the Almighty might have trouble hitting pro forma on that one.
Well, correct. And it goes back to what I did yesterday is what I can do tomorrow, because it worked yesterday. It's going to work tomorrow. And I don't have to think of the details, but opportunity zones are a whole different animal, and you have to approach them, as you said, differently. Would you say that the demographics is the greatest challenge in approaching opportunity zones, or do you think there's something else that contribute?
I think it's one of the big challenges. I think there's a few, right? So if I had to list the challenges, we've already talked about the demographics. So what do I see as other challenges? Number one is investor greed. I am seeing investor after investor of mine behave differently when it comes to opportunity zones. So I have, you know, a very tech-savvy investor group. We have about 1,200 investors, and they're very tech savvy. They tend to be the kind that are not, you know, afraid of complex underwriting spreadsheets themselves,
right?
Even though they're passive investors, they want to check everything. A lot of them live here and work for, you know, tech companies like Google and LinkedIn and Facebook and Apple, and so they're very tech savvy. And these guys, often when I launch projects, and these are non-opportunity zone value add projects, we'll look at like three of them and then pick one and do it very carefully. I'm not saying they're picking the right way, but at least they're applying due diligence, right? They're being sensible and logical about it. Now, the same group is behaving completely differently for opportunity zones. So I have this investor. He's 70 years old, lives in New York. You know, he's Israeli, has a very thick Israeli accent. And this guy, I'm not going to name him, but he has dragged me through the mud on individual phone calls for every project I've ever come out in. So I've spent maybe 9 hours with him on 9 different projects of mine, and he's picked 3 of them, right? So he kind of drags me through the mud. And then the moment I announce opportunity zones, he calls me up and says, Neil, I'm going to send you $750,000. And I'm like, but you only invest $100,000. You've never invested more than $100,000 in any of my projects. And he's like, no, I'm going to send you $750,000. I'm like, why? I don't have a fund. The regs are not clear.
Right.
I don't even have a project yet. He's like, no, I do not want to give my money to the IRS. So same guy behaving so differently, so irrationally, where he wants to send me money and have me put it in my bank, right? So that he can say, well, I'm done with it. You know, I met my six-month timeline. And that irrational behavior is one of the big challenges, because stuff is going to get built that should never have been built. And guess what happens 3 to 5 years down the line? When that stuff is sold at 60 cents on the dollar, it's going to drag the rest of the opportunity zone down.
Exactly, exactly. And the only people, as always, the only people who will float to the top are going to be the attorneys.
In my mind, I mean, that's why, if you remember, I got a chuckle out of people for this. I said the largest opportunity in opportunity zones is for trial lawyers, right, for litigation attorneys.
Exactly.
Because 3 to 4 years from now, they're going to be really, really busy because many promises will be broken. Developers typically don't hold properties at all, and they only hold them until they lease them up. And by the way, that's a generic, general statement. I know there's developers that have a holding model, and that's great. Those are people that are very suited to doing opportunity zone projects. But then you have others whose concept of holding a property is, we have a good property manager. That's their concept.
Right.
Well, that concept only works in a Class A area. When you've got a property in a Class C, an asset manager works very, very closely with a property manager on a weekly basis and suffers through a variety of upturns and downturns and, you know, sideways turns. The property is weird. All kinds of crazy stuff happens. And that is not being factored in by a lot of people in opportunity zones. The fact that the developers don't have sufficient skin in the game, that they don't have enough money in the game, and the fact that they don't have enough experience to hold in an area, an A property in a C area or an A property in a C plus area. I hear a lot of people saying, my area is a B area. And the answer is no, because the definition of the word C area and B area is very convenient. It's whatever we want it to be, right?
Right.
To me, I've invented my own definition, and it's very much a rule of thumb. But in my mind, if the income level of an area, right, if the income level of the area is $40,000 to $50,000 median income, that's got to be a C, right? At 50 to a 60, you're looking at a B minus. At 60 to a 70, you're looking at a B. And then above 70, that area could be an A,
right?
So that's my personal definition. I'm sure it's a rule of thumb, right? So it's not something that I've done math on. But it seems that most of the time, properties fit in there. What's scary is that people are doing opportunity zone projects, not in that C, 40 to 50 range, but below the 40,000 range.
Right.
They're doing projects in areas where the median household income is $32,000. Well, think about it. You need $1,500 a month to make money. That's $18,000 a year. How can people that only make $32,000 pay you $18,000 a year in rent?
That is just...
disaster. That will never happen. It might not even happen today in sub 4% unemployment. Forget about what happens when you hit a recession.
Right. That's right. What do you attribute the fact that people are like your client in New York? Why are they investing so much? Why are they approaching this from a completely unsustainable point of view? Why are they doing this, do you think?
Well, firstly, I think because the hype about opportunity zones is too bullish, right? So people are hyping it up without explaining that, oh, we're going to invest money into distressed areas, right? That's really what's happening, and people are not willing to phrase it that way. They're basically just saying, oh, you know, invest with us, and we'll make it tax-free and tax-deferred and future tax, you know, forgiveness, blah, blah, blah. They're focusing on the tax benefits so much that the reality of why the government is giving these tax breaks is getting buried.
It
doesn't get talked enough at
conferences. I would agree.
It doesn't get talked enough at webinars,
well.
Right?
Yeah,
I see maybe one slide in a presentation, and that slide, people go through it in 20 or 30 seconds, not highlighting that these areas have severe problems. You know, why would you be building a opportunity zone project in an area where population is declining? But I can tell you, if you look at some of the national portals like OZ Marketplace and some of the others, you're going to see those projects. And you're going to scratch your head going, did this person actually look to see what's happening in his area? No, he already had a piece of land, and he has all these investors willing to give him money, practically calling him to beg him to take money. That's the problem. Investor greed is the problem. There's too many investors calling me and asking me if I have projects available. They don't do that normally. They don't call me and ask me. They wait until I give them a project. But here, that 6 month clock is driving them nuts.
Right, and they know that you've done the background due diligence before you've started, so they feel confident in it. But you're completely right about opportunity zones. The hype is focused on the tax deferment and the tax savings and that, and the whole concept of opportunity zones and purpose of them is kind of a byline that nobody's really paying attention to. I can see that, absolutely.
Well, and then the last piece, you know, you asked me this question, what are the risks, what are the challenges? The one other challenge I see is this. Every webinar, every conference, there's going to be, you know, you go to a conference, there's 50 guys in 2 or 3 days that are going to utter these words. You know, every OZ project must pencil out independent of whether it's actually an opportunity zone project, right? Now, that's a very common sense statement, but it's also a very wishy-washy statement, and I'll explain why. There's many different ways to understand what penciling out truly means. My definition, the way, and it's a slightly strict definition, but that's how I define it. My definition is, if last year you were able to build a project for $1,600, let's say $160,000 a door, and you were able to get $1,400 in rent, and you know, and you were able to get a certain cap rate, then to this year, you're going to build that in an opportunity zone and get the same price or maybe 3% increase in price because of, you know, inflation on the costs and on the rents and still get the same cap rate. That's my definition of what penciling out means because that's what the traditional definition has been.
Right.
But that is not true because the quality of the opportunity zones is not the same. You cannot project the same rent increase that you were projecting in, you know, in a fantastic part of Nashville or a fantastic part of Atlanta. So you're gonna have to push those numbers down if you're conservative. And when you do that, and the fact that your exit cap rate is not going to be as low as it was for your previous projects, there's just no way the projects pencil out the same way as your last 10 projects.
Right.
So then the statement itself is misleading. In my mind, it's untrue. Here's what I would like to say. People should really be saying, if they were fully rational, that opportunity zone projects, by their very definition, are likely to have somewhat lower returns and somewhat lower IRRs than equivalent projects outside of opportunity zones. But we'll make it up on the taxes. We'll
right.
make it up on the taxes, right?
Right.
If you say that, I think that's what's closer to the actual reality than what is actually happening there now. There's this feeling that, oh, yeah, we were doing 13 IRR projects last year, and we're still doing 13 IRR projects. Well, if your opportunity zone project is a 13 IRR project, you either own the land before the opportunity zone law came out, and there's examples of those, or you're just projecting numbers that are not going to happen because the area doesn't support those rent growth numbers that you're projecting. And I think there's so many people that are using, oh, you know, we built our last 4 projects. We projected, you know, 3.5% rent growth. We got it. So we're going to project 3.5% here. No.
No, you can't.
Right. Well, the area doesn't support
it. Exactly.
And that's the problem.
Yeah, and Neil, and another point on that matter, too, is, as you said, you know, we'll make it up in the tax benefits on the opportunity zones. If you get involved in a project that is going to fail based on maybe the developer not doing his research on the demographics, and you know, what sense is the tax benefits when you're going to be losing money in the first place, right?
Yeah.
So it doesn't make sense on that end either.
Exactly. And I think that There's no profit to be made in a bad project. So there's no profit benefits anyway, right? Any project where the only benefit is tax deferment is a bad project. And I think that that's what people really need to understand. They really need to get that the quality is extraordinarily variable. There's some great ones in there. There's some really bad ones in there. I can suggest a very rudimentary but still extremely powerful way of gauging that. there's a website called InvestReel. They were up on the stage with me in Vegas, right? What
right.
they do is they basically have metrics.
Yes, we just right? podcast with them.
Right. So these guys yeah. are basically providing a basic quality metric for each OZ in America. And what I invite you to do as an investor, if you're an investor, is go out there, find 10 projects, and plug the addresses of those 10 projects into the InvestReel website. Even without paying InvestReel a fee, you're going to notice a dramatic difference in the quality of area. There's
Correct.
Going to be areas losing population. There's going to be areas with no job growth. And then there's going to be some areas, maybe 1 out of 10, 2 out of 10, where everything looks right. Well, by just doing this exercise, you've gone from, you know, now you understand that there's some projects in here that are probably going to lose money, and there's some projects in here that are going to possibly make more than is projected because the class could change from B to A. That
Correct.
Is how simple it is, right? Obviously, you know, you can always pay for paid tools and you can get more data. And I'm not suggesting that the difference between success and failure is as simple as that. I'm saying that on average, if you invested $50,000 into 10 such projects, using what I just mentioned to you, I think you're going to come out far ahead than by randomly investing in 10 projects.
Right. And people need to, you know, the tax deferment is an incentive, but the point of the opportunity zone is to redevelop and elevate the community, to bring the private sector instead of the government in to rejuvenate these areas. But even nevertheless, you just can't throw your money into it and say, okay, go for it. Here's my money. I don't want to pay taxes, because you're still not going to get anything in the end, and you still have to pay it. You just have to wait a long time to do it. It unless yep. you do, like you said, take 5, 10, 15 minutes and do one little exercise, and then you've elevated your level of success.
Correct. And I think that, you know, I have some suggestions on how, you know, investors could improve their returns, and I'm going to speak against myself. You know, I primarily, my multifamily, my opportunity zone projects for the most part are either multifamily or student housing or hotels. But strictly speaking from the perspectives of demographic success, you may be better off investing in storage or industrial projects in those areas. Why?
Right.
Because a storage project and an industrial project does not need the area quality to be that much better. Because if
exactly.
you're driving to your storage and it has one of those electronic fences, you don't mind driving through a slightly risky or shady area, right?
Correct.
And you're probably not moving storage stuff around at 9 o'clock in the evening anyway. You're doing it during the day on Saturday. So you drive in, get through the electronic gate, take care of your storage issue, and then you drive away. Now the fact that it's deep inside an opportunity zone may be less risky, right?
Right.
Still, I still urge you, even if you're investing in storage, to look at the demographics, because while the statement I just made is true, you still have that exit cap rate to consider. And if you go into a higher quality opportunity zone and invest in a storage project there, then 10 years from now, when you're exiting and your storage property is being sold, the cap rate will have compressed or is likely to be lower than what you know is prevalent today, because the quality of that OZ kept going up and up and up and up for 10 years. So
right.
even in those times, demographics matter. But my comment about storage and industrial being safer than multifamily is simply that you don't need, in that case, to be paying more for your storage. Class A new construction multifamily, you know, if people are paying $850 rent in that area, well, you need to charge $1,500 for a new property. If they're paying, you know, $1,200 for a Class C property, you probably need to charge $2,000 or $2,500. And so you have to go up a lot.
Right.
But when you're building something like storage, you don't have to go up a lot. You might have to go up 10, 15% because now it's air-conditioned, you know, climate-controlled storage as opposed to non-air-conditioned. But 10 or 15% is more palatable on an $80 a month rental than 50%, right? On
right.
a, you know, on an $1,800 unit. So in my mind, one of the things that I tell people is, look, I am not an industrial guy. I'm not a storage guy. I'm searching for projects like that in opportunity zones that I like. So I'd love to talk to storage and industrial developers. But actually, what they're doing is bang on for opportunity zone projects. And so is LIHTC, low-income housing trust, you know, units, affordable housing. Makes a lot of sense. Two reasons. Why? One is, every LIHTC developer is used to holding. They typically will hold for 15 years in one day, right? So
right.
They understand the pain, the process, the strategies, the success, you know, metrics needed to hold for 15 years. They're not going to buy something that they don't think they can manage, right? Because that's their life. They manage these properties and hold them for a long time. And secondly, they are receiving credits, further credits, you know, on top of these opportunity zone credits, and that makes the product more viable at a lower price point than what a market rate multifamily would hold. So I think these are all ways to, you know, take the demographics knob, tweak it to 100, and then actually use these things to tweak it to 200, and now you're reducing your risk and amping up your returns.
Right. And again, it comes down to thinking outside of the box. What happened and what worked for you yesterday, if you're going to be dealing with opportunity zones, not going to work for what you're going to do today. You have to think outside of the box in order to cover all the bases.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what this is about. Investors, stop thinking about the tax benefits. Start covering your bases.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a great message. I mean, if anybody takes anything from this podcast, that is the thing to take away for sure. But Neil, you know, before we close this out, can you tell our audience a little bit about what you're doing with the multifamily U? I know you do a lot of investor education on that. That's a separate website from Grow Capitus, right?
That's right. Grow Capitus is our investment website. We have about 1,200 investors. They're investing into student housing, multifamily, and you know, some hotel products, both new construction as well as value add existing products. So that's our bread and butter business, and that's where all the opportunity zone projects that we are going to be launching starting next month. Our first OZ project comes out next month. That's where it will be, growcapitus.com. You know, growcapitus.com. But something more interesting is Multifamily U. On Multifamily U, we do data-driven deep dive webinars, and we do them once a week, sometimes twice a week. But in a year, there are 50 webinars. We don't allow any kind of sales pitch. So it would be like this podcast, right? So where you
right.
basically are going through something that is important, but now in addition to audio, you basically also got charts and graphs. You know, we have a lot of technically minded, data-minded people that come and present on our platform. There's presenters like Ingo Windsor that talk about the best cities in America to invest in for real estate rentals. There's Enodo, which is, you know, one of the best underwriting automation software for multifamily, you know, anywhere. And soon we're going to be adding CoStar, which basically provides incredible analytics for opportunity zones, incredible analytics for where and you should buy large multifamily and where you shouldn't buy large multifamily. So companies like that. The webinars are all free. There is no subscription. There is no you never really have to sign up for anything. It is meant to be a pure play educational portal so that our company can connect with like-minded people in the space and do projects together. So multifamilyu.com, which is multifamily followed by the letter u.com, is probably the best place to start. We're going to be doing at least 3 or 4 different opportunity zone webinars on multifamilyu.com. in the next 3 months on different topics, legal, you know, quality of opportunity zones, you know, other challenges, you know, how to find the right developers, that sort of thing. So you're welcome to attend. There's about 25,000 people that sign up for webinars each year on multifamily.com.
Yeah, it sounds like if you watch enough of those webinars, after a certain period of time, you basically have a master's in real estate, right?
It is sort of a master's in real estate, one piece at a time, one product category at a time. And at some point, we're going to change the name away from multifamilyu.com because it's really about real estate. There's providers, content, and topic that have absolutely nothing to do with multifamily or even commercial. And we like that. We like the fact that we're offering a you know, higher diversity. Having said that, the biggest area of focus. One third of our webinars are definitely about the apartment space.
Yeah, and then one last point when you talk about Grow Capitalist. Are you guys setting up a Grow Capitalist fund, or like how are you doing that?
Well, after going to both Los Angeles and Vegas, the big Opportunity Zone conferences, I've made up my mind not to do a multi-purpose fund or a multi-project fund. So what we are going to be doing is a Grow Capitalist fund for individual projects. We find that because the quality of these projects varies so much more than a typical project, doing any kind of a blind pool fund where you're investing not knowing the type of assets that could be in that fund is dangerous.
Right.
You do not want to do blind pool funds when it comes to opportunity zones. You might, there are benefits of blind pool funds outside of opportunity zones, but here the quality is too variable for you to allow that. People are mixing, you know, caviar with cereal. I mean, that's what's happening. And so all of my projects are individual projects. So you invest in one project at a time, you give it money. So that Opportunity Zone fund is only managing one property.
Yeah, that makes
Yeah, that's great. And now if an investor or somebody is listening, or maybe a developer is listening to the podcast right now, Neil, and want to get a hold of you, what's the best way to do that? Is email, phone, or through the website? What do you think?
Through the website, through our both of our websites. We actually display our phone numbers on our website. We do not, do not prevent people from, looking at stuff. So you don't just have to fill out a form. You can just go to our website, look at our phone numbers, and call us.
Yeah. Okay. That's great. And, we'll put that links into the show notes as well. And this is real interesting stuff. You talk about the myths and the challenges of opportunity zones, and not a lot of people are talking about that. So I'm really happy you took the time out to bring that topic to our audience. Thank you so much, Neil. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
And
well,
Vicki,
one last question.
Yeah.
Do you have any projects that you're looking at in Vegas?
Yes, I'm actually looking at one in Vegas that is a kind of a large townhome sort of construction with a central clubhouse, but it's early days. I mean, but I'm really interested in Vegas. For the last 2.5 years, I've been telling people that Vegas is a strong market. I know it has a bad rep, a bad name, but I don't invest based on names. I bought a $30 million, well, $24 million property next to the Flamingo Hotel, and that property has done really well, right? I tend to ignore, city rep. I just look at growth, right?
Right. Well,
I'd love to do projects there.
And Vegas, because we have 5 different municipalities within the whole Vegas vicinity, some of these municipalities, North Las Vegas, Henderson, they have streamlined the opportunity zone process by streamlining the permitting process for construction by offering special financing to opportunity zone funds to help them along. Even North Las Vegas, you can come into Vegas in North Las Vegas, do an opportunity zone, go in one day and have your permitting and be able to start construction the next day. So they understand that there's a time situation with opportunity zones, and they understand the competition involved in the whole country, and they're making it much easier to do projects in Vegas.
That I really like, because I think the cities that do that are the ones that are more likely to win. Vegas already had a good shot, but if they're basically, bringing in additional forces to bear, that stuff is very powerful. I can tell you, I'm working with the city of Kennewick, Washington, the city of Birmingham, Alabama. I'm working with Hogan County in Colorado. These are all counties that said, we're going to launch strategic initiatives where we're going to do lots and lots of things that we don't do for regular projects. We're going to do them for OZs. Those cities are the ones that are going to win big.
Exactly.
Yeah.
With local tax incentives and local special financing with relationships with banks and just the construction aspect of a project, to streamline that whole project dealing with the government entity, that alone is very valuable.
Absolutely. Well, if you guys know of projects, and again, I'm looking to be connected to developers that have projects that need equity. Our challenge is we have a lot of equity. We don't have enough projects that we like to put them in.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we come across some of these every once in a while, so we'll definitely, you know, talk to you about that offline. But that's a great thing too. If anyone's out there listening, get in touch with Neil, and you know, let's make things happen. So anyway, folks, we're kind of running late on the show. Let me close it out here by once again thanking Neil Bauer from Multifamily U and Grow Capitalist. Thank you for being on the show. Vicki, thank you for co-hosting it. This is Ron Costa. You're listening to the Mappable USA podcast at mappableusa.com. You can go to that website, scroll down to the homepage. You'll see all our syndication sources. You just pick the one you like the best and subscribe so you don't miss any of our podcasts. And if you want to be a guest on the show like Neil was today, you can just fill out the guest tab, and we'll see about getting you on the show. So once again, thanks for listening, everyone, and have a great week. We'll be at you next time with another Mappable USA podcast. Take care.